I hate it, but that's how we work, Krisanov said.
You really are that tied to your ground radar? Zacharias asked.
It is a combination of factors, Krisanov replied. The new fighter regiments will be deployed along the Chinese border, you see.
What?
You didn't know. We fought the Chinese 3 times this year.
Your allies?
Krisanov snorted. Allies? From the outside, yes. Perhaps it looks as though all socialists are the same. My friend, we have battled with the Chinese for centuries. Their missiles can reach Moscow, I promise you, and they carry 0.5 megaton nuclear bombs. Zacharias sat back, wincing again at the pain in his back. Here, my friend. Krisanov handed over his flask, and this time it was accepted without resistance. He watched Zacharias take a long pull before handing it back. Robin, I am not worried about American B-52s. I am worried about Chinese bombers. That is the war my country is preparing for. He looked down at the concrete floor, pensive, then up at the prisoner. From that glance, Krisanov knew he had him. Months of work for this moment, Krisanov thought, like seducing a virgin. But much sadder. This man would never see his home again. The Vietnamese had every intention of killing these men when their utility ended. Zacharias didn't deserve to die, Krisanov told himself, recognizing the greatest irony of all. Kolya Krisanov and Robin Zacharias were now friends.
How does this grab you? Douglas asked, setting it on Ryan's desk. The wine bottle was in a clear plastic bag, and its surface was uniformly coated with a fine yellow dust.
No prints, Ryan looked it over carefully. Not even a smudge, Em.
Zilch, he shook his head. Same with the knife, just a partial from the victim. Either he stabbed himself in the back of the neck, or our suspect was wearing gloves.
Ryan closed his eyes, mentally reviewing the cases. Rob, not rob, change M.O. But the last one did have a witness. Go home, ma'am. Why was he polite? Ryan shook his head.
4 incidents, no physical evidence, a guy wearing gloves. A street wino wearing gloves, Douglas snorted.
Not enough, Tom.
I'm going to have Western District start shaking them down anyway.
Ryan nodded. That was fair enough. It was midnight when he left his apartment. Kelly drove the VW down the street, passing through the neighborhoods toward downtown. Tonight would be his first major payoff, he told himself. Kelly drove around his objective almost randomly while he sized things up. It paid off. He saw a pair of police officers talking to a street bum.
Looking for you, Johnny boy, he told himself.
He turned onto another street. Thank you, he said to Destiny, a block away from the corner brownstone. The roadrunner was right there, and it was early still. He parked as close to the house as he dared, then got out and walked down an alley to don his disguise. He paused at the corner, looking around. It was after 1 in the morning now, and things were settling down. Kelly headed south, maintaining his uneven, harmless gait. One of those who had hurt Pam was now within 100 yards, probably 2 of them. Objective in sight, he thought. Moving in now. The sentry betrayed himself. The streetlights revealed puffs of cigarette smoke coming out the door, telling Kelly exactly where the first target was. He switched the wine bottle to his left hand and flexed his right. He walked towards the door, which he knew to be ajar, and fell against it. Kelly tumbled to the floor.
Come on, pup!
Strong hands reached down, surprisingly gentle, both hands lifting him. Kelly twisted. His left hand slapped against the man's face. The right drove the K-bar knife through the ribs straight into the heart. Kelly twisted the blade, leaving it in as the body slumped. Kelly let him down slowly. Quietly, allowing himself a bit of satisfaction.
Remember, Pam,
he whispered to the dying body, and there was recognition through the pain before the eyes rolled back. Kelly withdrew the knife, which he wiped off from the victim's shirt,
and replaced in its scabbard. Kelly rested a moment. The principal objective was upstairs. The stairs were creaky, and Kelly moved slowly. His .45 was in his hand now, suppressor screwed on. Halfway up, he started hearing sounds, a slap, a whimper, a whine, followed by a cruel chuckle. Breathing next, heavy, rapid, and low. "Please," a despairing whisper that caused Kelly's knuckles to turn white. "What's the matter, door?" a male voice asked as Kelly reached the door to the bedroom. There was a mattress in the room, and on the mattress a woman kneeling, head down while a hand roughly squeezed her breast, then shook it. Kelly watched her mouth open in silent pain. "You did that to Pam, too, didn't you, you little fuck?" Kelly stepped into the room. "This looks like fun. Can I play, too?" Billy turned, looking at the shadow that had just spoken, and saw an extended arm with a big automatic. The face turned to a pile of clothing. He was naked, and his left hand held a tool of some sort, but not a knife or a gun. Those tools were elsewhere, 10 feet away, and his eyes could not bring them closer. "Don't even think it, Billy," Kelly said in a conversational tone. "Who the fuck on your face, spread eagle? Or I'll shoot that little dick of yours right off." Kelly altered his aim. "Down. Now." Billy did what he was told. Kelly pushed the girl back on the mattress and reached for his electrical wire. In a few seconds, the hands were securely wrapped and knotted. Kelly took the pliers from the left hand. Pliers. Jesus. The girl was staring at his face, eyes wide, breath heavy. She was drugged to some degree, and she had seen his face, was looking at it now, memorizing it. "Why do you have to be here? You're a complication. I ought to..." "If you do that, John, then what the fuck are you?" "Oh, shit." Kelly's hands started shaking then. This was real danger. If he let her live, then someone would know who he was. But the greater danger was to his soul. If he killed her, that was lost forever. Of that he was certain. Kelly closed his eyes. "Get dressed," he told her, tossing some stuff in her direction. "Do it now. Be quiet and stay there." "Who are you?" Billy asked. "You even breathe loud. Your brains go on this floor. Got it?" Billy nodded. "Damn, damn, damn." He pulled Billy to his feet, applied a gag, and turned him to the door. "Walk to the girl. You too." Kelly conducted them down the steps. What surprised Kelly was the girl's reaction to the body at the bottom. "Rick," she gasped. It had a name, Kelly thought. Out the back. After checking the streets, Kelly led them out to his car. He forced Billy in the back, then the girl into the front seat. "Who are you?" the girl asked as Kelly got in. "A friend," Kelly said. "I am not going to hurt you."
"Why did you have to kill Rick? He was nice to me."
What the hell? Kelly thought, looking at her. Her face was bruised, her hair a mess. He turned back to the street. Kelly could have done many things, but only one alternative was realistic. Realistic, he asked himself. Oh, sure. The doorbell rang at 3:15 in the morning. Sandy O'Toole woke, startled, then put on a robe and went downstairs. There was a shape on the porch. She turned on the lights as she opened the door. "Turn that fucking light off." She flipped the switch off.
"What are you doing here?" she asked, recognizing the voice.
There was a girl at his side, looking thoroughly horrible. "Call in sick. You're not going to work today. You're going to take care of her. Her name is Doris," Kelly said.
Wait a minute.
Kelly's mind started racing. Kelly was wearing a wig and had on awful clothes, but his eyes were burning with rage. "Remember about Pam?" he asked urgently.
"Well, yes, but..."
"This girl's in the same spot. I can't help her, not now. I have to do something else."
"What are you doing, John?" Sandy asked.
And then it was very clear, the news reports, the look she'd seen in his eyes in the hospital, the look she saw now,
the desperate compassion and the trust it demanded of her. Somebody's been beating the shit out of her, Sandy. She needs help.
John,
she whispered.
John, you're putting your life in my hands.
Kelly actually laughed, a bleak sound. Yeah, well, you did okay the first time, didn't you? He pushed Doris in the door and walked away, off to a car, without looking back.
I'm going to be sick,
the girl said. Sandy hustled her to the bathroom and got her to the toilet in time. After a minute or so, the girl looked up. Then Sandra O'Toole saw the face of hell.